This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a CAN model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
It's never the underdog.
Yes, sir.
It's never the underdog.
Yes, sir.
What's up, Duke fans? Welcome to the Devil's Den podcast. I'm your host, Josh Smith, joined by my co-host, Raul and Shu. We got John Watson of the Devil's Den with us. Going to do a little bit of a mailbag for some of the board subscribers over there. First off, there's just a lot of different questions, so I've tried to kind of organize them. At the top, we got some general stuff. Then we're really going to jump into the current team, talk a little bit about recruiting, roster fit, and then we'll kind of round it out with some kind of coaching stuff and a little bit of roundtable stuff there. But first one I got, and we can all kind of jump in and answer this one, and it's just a fun question. Me and she were kind of talking about it a little bit last week, but there was one on there just asking about the best Duke jersey. There's surprisingly like several that you could look at and choose from here. I don't think anyone's going to take the mid-90s Capel like sleeve jersey on there, but I'll throw that out there in case, you know, you were thinking about that. Since we were talking about it, Shu, let me go to you first. Have you thought about it anymore? What's your best Duke jersey? And tell me why it's not the 2020 Carolina Duke little, like, 100-year anniversary
one. Yeah. Terrible. I mean, dude, I still kind of gravitate towards that like 2010, the jersey with the chapel on the back.
You like the chapel?
Yeah, I like the chapel.
All right.
But I got another one that I'll let you guys go, and I'll just see if anybody.
Okay. Can. Well, I'm going to go to Roe next because I know Roe kind of hates those jerseys. So Roe, what's your anti-chapel jersey?
Yeah, that's one of my least favorites. Actually, that's funny. I always just like the road blues almost no matter what. But I'd probably have to either go with, I think 2004 look really sharp. If you see some pictures with like Duhon and Redick in the Final Four. There's one kind of iconic photo with the whole starting lineup. And I just think those look great. And then Grant Hill era, I could not tell you whether it was like 92 or 94, but just some of those, seeing Grant Hill in the road blues too.
Yeah.
Those look
yeah.
sharp as well. I kind of like how back then they didn't put as many decals on them either.
Yeah.
So it's just a cleaner look.
Yeah, that the Grant Hill. Yeah, seeing Grant and those like those Duke Blues playing Michigan, or I think there's like a really good like picture of it. That's what I usually think of. John, what about you? You got a favorite Duke purple, maybe?
Yeah, I go back to when everyone talks about the Duke Blue, I go back to there's a picture of Duhon in 2000, I guess it was 2002 or whatever. He's just in it's that royal blue. It looks almost like a metallic wetness within the blueness. It's just, that's what I always think of with, you know, Blue Devils and all that kind of stuff. Anybody who follows me on Twitter knows I'm not a huge fan of the black uniforms, but they're here to stay. And I do like the chapel uniforms. I thought that was just, it was innovative when they did it.
I mean,
you know, there's a lot of options, man.
You can't put that on as anybody else.
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised nobody wanted to bring up the Battleship Gray ones with Miles Plumlee. And
I got one of those. Yeah. Signed by Seth, actually.
There you go.
Yeah. There's a, we've had a lot, man. I think, If I had to pick one, it would probably just be those throwback blues. I really loved in 2015 when they kind of brought back that traditional kind of looking like road blue for a while there. But you know, since no one's taken, I guess I will. I'm a huge fan of those like Navy Brotherhood ones, though, like the Gothic Duke one. It looks different. Yeah. It's not like your traditional Duke blue. But I like that one better than the white version of it for whatever reason. But yeah, so I'll go with the Brotherhoods.
I'm glad John brought it up that he doesn't like the. So when I was, I guess it was middle school, like 96, 97, when they first introduced the black uniforms, I remember I was with my buddy and we're literally like waiting on the Duke game where it's vivid. I was playing like Diddy Kong Racing, you know, and we came out in the black uniforms and I was like, whoa.
Wasn't that Villanova with Kerry Kittles?
It was either no. I felt like it was that or Saint John's game. I remember more Diddy Car. I was getting my ass kicked in Diddy Car.
I thought it was Villanova because I remember Rick Majerus talking about how Kerry Kittles had big socks on or something.
He always wore the tall socks. Yeah, but yeah. I loved when we first introduced the black jerseys. Now you know people say they could be cursed, whatnot. But
hey, didn't we recently have a great performance in them? Was that Pittsburgh or I feel like we wore them recently on the road and played well.
I think so. Yeah. 2019 flipped the script a little bit because they kind of made it this like funeral thing where it was like, okay, that's kind of cool if we can all adapt that. But I remember like the early aughts, like the early 2000s, it was like the black jerseys come out. Like I remember 01 Duke for sure. I think it was, we go to Florida State. We're wearing them. We lose by five. I think it happened again. Yeah. It just was like, okay, let's get rid of these for a while. But maybe it's kind of transitioned back here. All right, next one's a little bit someone I'm assuming they're asking this probably because he's just been tearing the league up the last few nights. I think he's the only player in the league to hit 9 threes in a game, and he's done it twice. Yep. So where does Grayson Allen rank on the all-time Duke list? We'll send this around before just a little bit of stuff that I pulled. He's top 10 in assist percentage, box plus minus, three-pointers made, three-point percentage, free throw percentage, win shares, and player efficiency rating. Where do you think he ranks on your all-time? John, I'll send this one to you first, just to up and down career there for Grayson. We were talking about it offline, huge sophomore year, title as a freshman, adversity as a way to say it, right? The last 2 years. Where do you rank him now in your kind of Hall of Legends?
I mean, I don't have him in the top 10. Yeah. Maybe probably top 25 or so. But I mean, you know, it's so hard. I mean, like we said, we were talking offline. I mean, how do you rate a 4-year guy against a 1-year guy? Mm-hmm. I mean, are we taking their best seasons? Because you have to, if you're including the 1-year guys, but you know, obviously I don't think he's any of the guys in the rafters that we all saw play. So that would be, I guess maybe starting with Danny Ferry or so. Yeah. You know, I don't think he's got a better career of any of those guys who have had it retired since. I would say Singler is ahead of him. You know, then you start looking at guys in the one and dones. That's really tough for him. Yeah. I mean, would you say who had a better career, Grayson Allen or Tyus Jones? I mean, you know, because Grayson's sophomore year was amazing. Tyus's freshman year was legendary,
right?
But not until about the last half of the year. I mean, it's so interesting to see, and I think this will, you know, bleed into some discussions later about, you know, retirement of jerseys and all that kind of stuff. But you know, pure talent at Duke, I don't have him in my top 20. I don't think.
Yeah,
But again, I think that's fair. It's hard because, like I said, I mean, how many more 4-year guys are we going to see? I mean, the most recent one's Jeremy Roach, and his career doesn't touch Allen's. I would say.
Right.
So I mean, you know, it's that's hard to calculate as well, but yeah, I'd say it's, you know, all time he's probably in the top 25 to 40 players all time, which I think is fair.
Yeah, and it's fickle too, right? Because like, what changes if a ball doesn't hit the rim for the fourth time in 2018 against Kansas and that thing goes down, and then he has two Final Fours, and we probably get beat by Villanova that year because they were just ridiculous. But it would be a second Final Four, right? Or if 2017
and he's
goes
differently. He's the hero in the championship game, and he hits the shot that sends us to a second Final Four.
Yeah. Right. Right. That could, you know, that's probably a 10-spot bump, maybe, right? Like, if that happens, maybe he goes up to not too many guys have played in multiple Final Fours. So
I look at his, I mean, he was fantastic for you know, 8 to 12 minutes against Wisconsin as a freshman. You know, kind of the unsung hero coming off the bench, hadn't done anything all year. It always, to me, was kind of like the new version of Marty Clark against Indiana, where, you know, Hurley, Leitner's just completely out of it. Hurley's doing well, but Marty Clark's the guy who steps up and hits all the free throws. Yep. I mean, it's that kind of thing. Now, his sophomore year, he went from being, you know, the unsung hero to being a guy who should have left for the NBA because he was just that good.
Yeah.
I mean, his sophomore year was ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the best guard seasons in Duke history, actually.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But then, you know, falls off and then really falls off. And then narrative wise, just got murdered by the whole tripping thing and all that kind of stuff. So,
Yeah. Blue kind of stole the shine a little bit in 17, right? Because then he follows up what was awesome about Grayson's year and then kind of almost outdoes it a little bit like the very next year. So, Well, you know, shouts to Grayson. And then
18, everything is kind of running through Bagley, and you also have Carter and there. Carter, and it's just like, and there's Trent. It's there's not enough shots to go around for him to average 22 points a game.
And I think, you know, when they tried to play him at point guard, was that the year Duval was there? And then,
Trent was with him.
Figured out, there just weren't enough shots, like you said. And he wasn't like Shire. He wasn't like other guys who could hunt their shot, but then also could facilitate and game manage. That just wasn't who he was.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's tough that he played out of position for those years.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of 2018, man, if we could have, if Kennard comes back and you don't have to go like fishing weight for Duval and you have Kennard, Allen and Trent on the perimeter with Bagley and Carter, that's pretty deadly. But,
Do the next year, which is another fun offseason podcast, but add Gary Trent to Zion's team.
For sure. Like, that would be a really fun one there too, because that's what they needed too, was just somebody that could shoot. But all right, let's transition to the current team here a little bit. Someone was asking, what do you think Duke's ceiling is, and has that changed since the start of the season? We talked about it a lot. I mean, John, I'm assuming at the beginning of the season, the ceiling was national championship or at least making it to Phoenix. Is that maybe it changed, but has that came back to that? I mean, is that, that's probably still the ceiling, right? A Final Four contender.
Yeah, it hadn't changed for me at all. I mean, they, the thing we need to see is they, you know, they were a team that was pretty new, started the season, a bunch of sophomores and, you know, a bunch of freshmen. And we've seen the flashes. I mean, you know, Mark Mitchell disappears and dies, but then comes back and should have been ACC Player of the Week 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Filipowski has been brilliant, consistent, and then not so consistent. The freshman guards are kind of finding their way. Proctor's been hurt for, even though he's back, he's still dealing with, you know, recovering. The pieces are all there. The talent is there. It's just nobody's been consistent yet. Yeah. And it seems like every time you get somebody going to be consistent, something happens. And, you know, like right now, you got Roach, who has been brilliant this year.
Yeah.
He's hurt. You got Mitchell, who is just rounding into form. He's hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's tough. But if they ever can get all everybody on the right path and on the same wavelength, I still think it's one of the two or three best teams in the country. It's just they're going through some adversity right now, and they haven't handled it as well as you would hope, but it doesn't mean the ceiling's any lower.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, UConn a year ago was a middle of the pack Big East team, or American, whatever they're in right now.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, people just get hot, and you got to have the pieces, and this team can defend, this team can shoot. You know, I've got some questions about the rebounding here and there, but they've got all the pieces they need to get to where they want to go. It's not like you're looking at this team going, oh, they're just, you know, their ceiling is the Sweet 16. I don't believe that at all. I think the floor is the Sweet 16. I just, if the you know, the caveats are they going to stay healthy, and can everybody get on the same page? And so far that hasn't happened. But you see the flashes. I mean, McCain was really, really good for a while. Foster has been really steady.
Yeah.
You know, can that all maintain once you get the lineup back and everybody healthy?
Yeah.
And if they can, then I see no reason they won't be in Phoenix. I mean, they are very, very, very good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that for me, I mean, I know like it got crushed after that Georgia Tech game, but we're not really the 30th best defense, right? We've been kind of in that like 15 to 20 range for a while. And I think if we're, you know, the defense has been surprising for me, you know, like this isn't a team that like, to me, like on paper should be a top 15 defensive team, right? I mean, look at some of those K teams that were struggling to stay like top 100 at times, right? Or top 75 at times, and way more athleticism or even height in different places. So I think defensively, that's at least been a good thing so far if we're not playing Georgia Tech.
But, yeah, and I heard Brendan Marks say on Locked On the other day that during this winning stretch, we've been sixth in offense. So you put together the sixth best offense, and if we can get back up into that kind of 15 to 20 range on defense, like that's a good enough split for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Because even 2015, they finished with the 11th ranked defense, but they were like 30th to 50th for like all of January.
And then locked in the tournament.
Yeah. I think they were even like 25 or 28 or so even heading into the tournament. And then it just like, they just went on a tear. So, you know, it could happen. Next one, let's see, as of today, who do you think is leaving, coming back from the current roster? Particularly, I guess, in regards to guys like TJ Power, Sean Stewart, is Proctor and Mark Mitchell kind of gone regardless of what happens? Does Roach exercise the fifth year? Does Shoot Reeves redshirt and then look elsewhere? Does Jalen Blakes decide to kind of explore and take a year somewhere? Like, what do you think this is going to play? Because it looks like the staff is recruiting as if they're expecting anywhere from 6 to 8 maybe could not be back. Is that kind of tracking with what you're thinking too?
Yeah, I think they're recruiting for everybody to leave. And, you know, worst case scenario.
Right.
Because, you know, just start, you know, look at Roach. I mean, he could come back for the COVID year. It's really, for me, a question with him of, you know, what does he want? I mean, could he make more money at Duke with NIL and being the face of the program next year? I think he certainly could, but I'd also make the argument he's not the face of the team this year. Do we really think he's going to be the face of the team next year with Cooper Flagg? You know, I don't. Could he make money? Yeah, sure, absolutely. Does he want to? I don't know. I kind of lean to him saying this is his last year. He's got his degree. He's shown that he's consistent. And I wonder if it's not a situation where, you know, if he finishes up the year like that he's had, where he's putting these up incredible shooting splits, he's not turning the ball over, he's doing everything he needs to do, you know, is it time for him to go ahead and go get in the G League and try to tear it up there to try to, you know, eventually earn his way to the league? You know, that's a consideration. As far as, you know, the rest of the starting lineup, I think Proctor's gone. I think it was always a 2-year plan. So I think he will end up going. I may be wrong. These are opinions, but I think Mark Mitchell, I think he almost has to come back at this point. You know, you're going to have some conversations in the off season, but I mean, where is he going to go that he's going to get a better look? He's going to get, you know, better exposure. And I think next year, we were talking offline. I think next year with Flag, you know, Mitchell and Flag will be kind of interchangeable with the 3 and 4, strategically and both in the lineups. You know, one of them might play on the 3 on offense, one of them might play the 4 on defense.
Right.
But I think Mitchell might actually do well beside Flag. As far as like, you know, obviously Ryan Young's gone. Mm-hmm. He's exhausted his eligibility. Flip obviously is gone. You know, then you start looking at, you know, the rest of it. McCain and Foster. I would expect Foster to be back, no question. I lean towards McCain coming back. One, he has incredible amounts of off the court earning. He's a guy, I think, if he became like Luke Kennard next year.
Yeah.
Just had that monster sophomore season. You've got the big time freshman with Flag. I think he could really maximize, make a lot of money. And I think he could showcase some things that the NBA wants to see as kind of a secondary ball handler, maybe playing the Nolan Smith role to Caleb Foster's John Shire in the way they run offense. You know, I think those two could probably come back. After that, Jalen Blakes, you know, it's a question. Does he want to do the gold wire thing and go start somewhere?
Sure.
I don't know if that's the case or not. I know he loves Duke. I know he's a tough kid who's done everything, but he'll also have a degree. He'll have a year of eligibility left. And let's be honest, he's not starting next year. Yeah. Does he want to go as a senior and, you know, go play somewhere else. I don't know the answer to that. I could see him going maybe up into the Big East somewhere, you know, maybe somewhere in the Big 12 and just playing and being a starter. I mean, he's good enough. But there's questions about, you know, his offense. Well, he's not going to get a bunch of shots if he's at Duke. You know, does he stay or not? It's a variable. I don't think a decision's been made there. And then we're looking at the freshmen this year, TJ Power and Sean Stewart.
That's the big ones, right?
Yeah, I'm torn because, and I wrote about this on the site the other day, but like with Power, I just kind of sit there and think, you know, he wants to compete, obviously, but he's not able to get on the floor this year. And, you know, what is he? Is he a three? Is he a four? I mean, if Mitchell comes back, I think I make the argument, we were talking about offline, I make the argument Mitchell's going to start a small forward, which means he's going to play 30 minutes a game. So now where does Power play? Does he play the 10 minutes behind Mitchell at the three? And then when Mitchell goes to the four, you know, you could make the argument, but then you're going to have all those other guards and wings that are coming in. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to have, you know, Khan, Isaiah Evans, you're going to have maybe Darren Harris. You've got a ton of guards coming in who can all shoot. You know, does he play? I don't know. And then, you know, with Sean Stewart, it's the same question. He's not going to start over Cooper Flagg. We know that. So, you know, he's not going to play power forward next year. So then is he going to be in the middle? Well, they've only got one center on the roster right now. And I'll get to the other reserve bigs in a second. But, you know, I sit there and think, could he be a small ball five? Could he be a regular five at, you know, 6'8", 6'9", 230, 240 pounds next year? And, you know, super athletic. I mean, that's plenty big enough to play a big, you know, in college basketball.
For sure, but yeah.
Is he going to play over Pat? You can make that argument. The kid they're looking at in Africa right now who's coming in, who is a projected top five pick, I think those two would be the Pat and he would both probably projected to start at center. So, I mean, at that point, if you're Sean Stewart, you're going, you know, am I going to back up Cooper Flagg for a year and then as a junior take over a starting spot? Absolutely, that's possible. Is he patient enough? And that's a real question. You know, the thing you see this year that I think has people asking questions is Mark Mitchell's out right now and this guy can't get on the floor. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that's an issue. You know, because it's not going to get any easier next year. And then of course, you know, 2025, they're looking at bringing in another couple of power forwards. So, I mean, you know, what is his role?
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, can he carve it out and that kind of stuff? Christian Reeves, people ask about, I think he's done. I think it's not been announced yet, but if he's not medically redshirting this year, I'll be stunned. In fact, I'm pretty sure he is being medically redshirted to save a year of eligibility. I know he wants to play. I know he's made it clear he wants to play. I don't see a path for him to play at Duke anytime soon. I may be wrong. This is speculation on my part, but call it informed and speculation.
Yeah.
And so the last one would be Jaden Shute. You know, I actually had a conversation about this the other day and was told, you know, last year people were just sure this kid was going to, he was going to transfer, you know, top 45 kid, high four star, had a bunch of Big Ten offers and didn't play. So all these people were sure that he was going to transfer. You know, transferring never entered this kid's mind. He never once looked at it, which, you know, is admirable. But again, now he's redshirting. He's got 3 years of eligibility left. Where is he going to play next year? And, you know, the answer is he could start. If Jared McCain leaves, if, you know, Roach is gone, Blake's is gone, and then you got four or three other freshman guards coming in, you can make a real case that a guy who's going into his third year of college basketball, he could be a favorite to start. But are they recruiting like that? You know, I don't know.
Right.
And, you know, again, I think a lot of these decisions are just tied into what happens with other people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I would lean towards Shute maybe being done, but, you know, again, I don't know. And I know he's been adamant and was adamant last year that transferring wasn't on his mind. But then again, I go back to, you know, okay, well, they could really have used some shooting this year and he was redshirting, you know, behind Blake's, who does a lot of things, but shooting's not one of them. You know, behind McCain, who started kind of slow, behind Foster, who started kind of slow. I mean, it's, you know, it's just, is he, I don't want to say over his head, but is there a path for him to get the kind of playing time he wants? And I think that's the question that's yet to be answered. So, and again, why do you redshirt? I don't remember the last kid who would have redshirted and then played a big role after redshirting. I don't remember there being precedence for that.
Yeah.
And it's not like Duke's stopping recruiting. I mean, you know, Isaiah Evans is a very good player. You know, Khan is a very good player. You know, Darren Harris is a very good player. And the plan has always been for McCain and Foster to be the starting backcourt next year. So, you know, you got those, was that five players on the wing?
Mm-hmm.
Then you were talking, we're talking about the decisions with, you know, Mark Mitchell, potentially, Cooper Flagg, and then the post guys. I mean, it's crowded.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I've told everybody, is, and I'm parroting this verbatim, not everybody's going to play. And not everyone's going to play as much as they want to because they can't. You know, you only have 200 minutes in a basketball game. So, you know, that's unfortunately in this day and age where kids can transfer and be compensated for doing it. I just don't know that the days of waiting your turn, I don't know how that fits in today's day and age.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of like kind of like curiosity on the front end, right? Of like, well, how deep is Shire going to go? Like, is that going to change? And I think, you know, he's maybe a little more liberal than Kay was, but it looks like he's still kind of in the mold of like 7.5, 8. If I can get 8 guys, that's where I'm comfortable. That's kind of how I want to run my rotations. Maybe he plays 9 or 10, but it just doesn't seem like that's what he really wants to do, or that's how he does it naturally.
It seems hard to me to really determine it, because last year they were super deep. I mean, last year he was playing guys that Kay wouldn't have played, you know, if his life depended on it. And he was doing it early. You know, then the rotation tightened up a bit, but I mean, you know, this year I'd kind of argue who should play, you know, that's not playing. I mean, you know, and that's kind of the issue. We've not really seen these lineups with, you know, a lot of options, I guess, because I mean, the only guys who aren't playing right now are Power and Stewart, and you know, I'm sure you guys have talked about that a bunch, but you know,
well, and Power's got, I mean, it's not like he's been completely just like nixed, right? Like, he's gotten opportunities and meaningful games to get some shots up or to get out there. Sean is a little bit different, but we talked about that just in terms of the defensive responsibility, right? Like, if you're going to be out there and you're going to be back on the back line, you got to be calling out switches, you got to be calling out coverages, and that's tough on a freshman.
I think that's the problem he's dealing with right now. I mean, you know, who does he come in for? You know, he either comes in for Filipowski or Ryan Young, you know, and if it's Young, Young's going to tell him where to go. If it's Flip, you know, Flip is going to be just as aggressive as Stewart is and going after the ball.
Sure.
And you really lose a lot of communication on that back line because it just turns into a layup line.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's difficult with those guys, but yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what Shire's rotation ends up being. But I definitely think he wants shooting, he wants rebounding, and he wants to control the game. I don't know that John Shire's preferred attack is going to be the early 2000 teams where they're scoring and averaging like 95 a game or something.
Blitzing, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that's in his makeup or repertoire. I mean, he certainly hasn't recruited like that. You know, he's recruited guys who have high basketball IQ, who can rebound, who can defend, who can, you know, who are kind of a controlled pace style. Yeah. We haven't seen him recruit anybody who's just a speedster.
Yeah, almost everybody that he's recruited, or that we've landed at least, are like very cerebral players too, right?
Yeah.
Like the way they think the game, the way they operate within the game. This entire class is like that, right? Like very cerebral. Cooper's up there. Khan's definitely up there. And the current the team now, Proctor, very cerebral guy. McCain, Foster, yeah. I've been impressed with his ability to like I mean, he's been out there at times and you can't really know that he's out there, but that's better than like having a negative influence by just turning it over all the time, or just he was able to play within the flow of the game. So, you know, so far style, it's worked.
The style's there. One thing, I don't know if you guys saw the HoopHall game the other night with Cooper with Flag and the people are going to hate Cooper Flag, man.
Yeah, they are.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you, people are going to hate this kid.
I can't wait.
He is, and he's going to feed off of it. Like, I feel like Filipowski feeds off of it, but Flip does it more of a fun and I don't know, kind of like a satire kind of way. Cooper's just a dog, man.
Yeah.
People are gonna hate
it. It's different when you feed off of it and then you go out and pin someone's stuff against the backboard and then like just windmill dunk on someone, right? Like Flip's not really doing that. Right. So
Flip will smirk at you. I mean, Flag will sit there and like dunk on you and then just stare you down.
Take your soul. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm telling you, being that guy in a Duke uniform, and the funniest part was like at the interview that Ben Cardi did with him after the game. You know, they'd just be prolific prep, and it was Cooper actually made like the game sealing steal and all this other stuff. And, you know, ESPN, of course, asked him, you know, how are you such a good defender? And I think Flag said something like, oh, it's just natural talent. I just started laughing when he said it, because I'm going, my God, he'll say that once at Duke and it'll just be public enemy number one.
Yeah.
He'll feed off of it.
Yeah. I'm just good.
Yeah. I'm so excited for Cooper. Well, let's talk about, first, let's take a little quick break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about recruiting. I think that's a good enough segue. Let's take five.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
All right, let's come back. So someone asked, and we were kind of just talking about this offline, but so who do you think Duke's most important recruit is that's not named Cooper?
I think it's Khan, the shooting guard. I just think this is a kid who is, you know, he's tough. He reminds me a lot of the Reed Shepherd kid from Kentucky. Mm. He just, maybe not quite as quick, but he's athletic enough. He would be a killer at somewhere like Purdue or something.
Oh yeah.
Incredible scorer, incredible shooter, plays the game the right way. He's essentially, I know Shire thinks he's pretty much a very similar player to what he was, maybe similar to Luke Kennard. Just, you know, when I look at those guys, I just see this is just a guy who he'll make the right plays. He'll knock down shots and he won't be a total liability if they get who they're talking about getting on the back line of the defense. But they need another scorer. And if they do get the kids we're talking about, you know, in the post, and we have, you know, Mitchell, Cooper, and then I guess we'll talk about the kid from Africa. If they get him, I mean, obviously he would be a game changer. But as far as this question goes, I'm assuming this question was meant for the commitments, since there's only one more outstanding target. Right. So of the commits, I would say it's Khan. Obviously you change the game if you get this kid from Africa, based on what everyone's saying about him. But I just think, regardless if you get him or not, you're going to need space and you're going to need scoring. They're going to be very good on defense. they're going to be tough on the boards, but you're going to have to score. Because, I mean, no disrespect to Mark, but if he's back as a junior, I mean, I'm hoping he shoots better than 10% from 3-point. But,
right, yeah,
you know, spacing is going to be an issue, potentially.
Yeah. Especially around Cooper, right? You got to have outlets. You got to have people in the corners that can knock those shots down.
Well, you need smart players, too. Like, I mean, again, going back to the hoopla game, you know, one of the most important plays is at the end of the game. Prolific Prep goes, takes a shot. Flag rises up out of the scrum, gets the rebound, and then it's a loose ball knocked away. He goes over to the corner, and before the defender can get to him, he throws a 40-foot outlet pass to McNeely, who's going to Indiana,
yeah,
who's already streaking up midcourt. You know, that's a wonderful play on two fronts, because one, you get the ball away from your basket. Two, you're going to score to put the game away, as opposed to, as we've seen with Duke at the last 2 years at times, guys just kind of stand and watch, and there's no anticipation. Mm-hmm. And I think with a guy like Cooper, you know, even with Falster, even with Proctor, you need guys who are not just going to be statues. They're going to anticipate. They're going to be moving to a spot where those guys can deliver the ball. And I just see that, you know, that's one of the kids who's just going to do it. I like Isaiah Evans for what he could be. He's got a lot of scorer's mentality in him. He's got a lot of, you know, a lot of the kids that they're bringing in are just competitive. You know, I don't know that you're going to have games where next year's team has to kind of get punched in the mouth in order to set the tone.
Yeah.
I don't know that just because of the personalities. But, you know, Evans has a lot of that, but Evans has a lot of work to do on defense. Mm-hmm. And he can be sort of a high volume shooter and not always a high volume maker. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw the, I guess it was Giovanni that did kind of the scouting breakdown that got people kind of like up in arms about it, critiquing kind of the shot selection and just needing to rein that in a little bit and figuring out. But I do like him as the opportunity to, whether that's starting or off the bench, he has that microwave potential, right, where he can just come in and score in bunches
like
for you.
When he plays well, he plays really well.
Yeah,
he'll make like nine threes and then it'll be really cold the next game.
Yeah, then it'll go like 2-for-13 or something like that, right? It happens. I get it.
You know, the thing with Evans is that, I mean, with them missing on Edgecombe, I mean, Evans has a chance now because, yeah. I mean, you know, can he not only be a shoot, but can he slash? Can he absorb contact and finish at the rim? Because they need that because they don't have it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we can talk about with the Edgecombe and kind of, you know, recap postmortem, but, you know, they need slashing. They need someone who can get to the rim, absorb some contact, and at least get to the free throw line, if nothing else.
Yeah.
And if Mitchell was to leave, you know, Evans
has
a guy
huge hole. Yeah.
He slots into the three because he's probably the biggest of those guards, I think, just in terms of height, maybe. He's kind of skinny, but.
Yeah, he's 6'6 and,
right,
you know, about 120 soaking wet. So.
Yeah.
But no, he's got that Brandon Ingram thing. It's just, you know, he doesn't have Ingram's height or length. And
it's Ingram's like 6'8", 6'9". Long, real lanky. You mentioned it, so let's talk about VJ, right? Because I think that is the hot take, the hot news coming out. It seemed like there was a lot of momentum there for a little while during the visit. But then I think, and John, you correct me here if I'm wrong, there was a lot of like towards the end of like surprised kind of reactions from Duke fans. But for me following it, it was kind of like, I don't want to call this kid an afterthought, but I think it was almost an afterthought in terms of from the fan side, the class was already big. There was already a lot of guys there. Like unless he just really wanted Duke, it was pretty easy for me to see, you know, there's a lot of options at other places for you to have a bigger role, for you to kind of be more of a marquee guy here. What do you think that you can disclose here kind of swayed that back towards Duke? And do you think Duke was really like option two here and it came to the very end? Or do you think it was just the kid had a great visit, riding high off the visit, went back home, took a couple of days and things cooled off and he made the right choice with his head?
Yeah, I think it with Duke and him, you know, obviously Duke got in late. And this kid was one of the highest risers in the class. I mean, you know, he was top 70, then top 50, then all of a sudden he's a top 5.
Right.
you know, they went after him because, quite frankly, they don't have anybody like him. I mean, they don't have, as we just talked about, they don't have the 6'5", 6'6". They don't have Gerald Henderson.
Yeah.
They don't have Cassius Stanley. Yeah. They don't have even a Wendell Moore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have the athletic guy on the wing who could be a plus defender who's going to put pressure off the dribble. They don't have the guy who's going to be the high flyer. They don't have that guy. And, you know, Edgecombe was certainly that guy. You know, as far as his recruitment goes, I think most people thought he was going to commit with the other two, Cooper and Pat, who, you know, did commit after the big official visit weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But like we were talking about offline, you know, from the kid's perspective, he gets home from Duke, the other two commit, and the word is that, you know, he's going to commit. That's when all the crystal balls went in, because the word was, you know, hey, we got him. And it wasn't from the staff saying that. It was just a lot of ancillary stuff, a lot of stuff from within the recruiting class saying, you know, these guys, he's going to come. Well, then, and I don't have the actual timeline, you know, memorized point by point, but I know Kentucky came in hard and heavy after the Duke visit. And I think the next time anyone got BJ to talk on record, you know, he was talking about how he had a great visit, you know, the brotherhood, NBA stuff, yada, yada, yada. But the comment that stuck out was, man, they've got a lot of guys. And, you know, that was true. And then Baylor just kept going. And, you know, everyone, the national guys were always telling us, you know, Duke has made a great pitch. They've got the, you know, the playing time lined up, the role lined up. But man, this guy has a good relationship with the staff at Baylor.
Yeah.
And, you know, to answer your question, I think at the end of the day, it just came down to, and the kid said this, you know, it was, he had a really good connection with Baylor. He's got a really direct path to be option one or 1A at Baylor next year. And, you know, sometimes they just connect better with other people. And I think that's kind of what happened here. You know, I don't think there's any ill will. I don't think, you know, anything bad. It's just, end of the day, the kid liked Baylor more. I think Duke did finish second. Kentucky was out. You know, St. John's was out. But, and, you know, I think Duke finished second because they're Duke. You know, there were a lot of questions. You know, it's a very crowded roster potentially. You know, what if Mitchell does come back? What if Foster and McCain come back? Well, then VJ's not starting. I mean, that's just the bare facts.
Yeah.
You know, but at the end of the day, I think he just had a really good relationship with the Baylor staff. And, you know, as far as the shock and awe goes, I mean, the word didn't really change much from after the visit up until the week that VJ committed to Baylor, because he wasn't talking. There were no leaks. Nobody knew. And then as it got closer and closer, it started leaking out a little bit that, you know, yeah, he's really tight with Baylor. Yeah, then it became he's told the Baylor staff. I mean, right. If you look at our site, you know, we talked about, you know, this could happen. And then all of a sudden we got on there and said, you know, I think the information has changed and now it's Baylor. And that's when we started making our
– Yeah.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, people need to realize it's – recruiting is fluid. It's not a cop-out. It's just a fact. I mean, you know, and maybe his preferences were not as fluid as we all thought, but, you know, if the kid's not talking – his AAU coach isn't talking. His high school coach isn't talking. His buddies aren't talking. I mean, you know, I know recruits that were 3 days before he committed thought he was going to Duke. And then, you know, at Hoop Hall, it started leaking out that, like, you know, the guys who were playing at Hoop Hall, Harris, Evans, and Flagg were kind of like, yeah, I don't think he's coming, because he had kind of ghosted them over the last couple of weeks. But, you know, we're not bothering these kids every day.
Right. And so,
you know, we didn't know. And quite honestly, they're in the middle of their seasons. They're not going to worry about that. They're worried about their stuff. So, you know, once all the information started pooling a little bit, which is what happens when, you know, a bunch of teams come together, because then everyone is talking, that's when it started leaking out. And that's when we made the change in the crystal ball picks. So,
yeah. I don't think it was up there with like the, like, to me, I think most of the time when these recruitments, and you can talk about this too, right? It seems like, you know, sometimes kids go radio silent and it's just the kids are going radio silent. I feel like since I've been like following you all like the last, gosh, 16 years or however long it's been, it's typically when you get into those final like 3 to 4 or 5 days, if there's silence there, that's usually not a good thing, right? Because usually like the staff has then been informed, like, okay, we're coming. And then when you start to get little leaks through on our end, and it's like, okay, every now and then, I guess you get a Zion or something where it's just, but even going back to Harrison Barnes, right? Like that was like the one where everyone marks it as like the huge flip, but there were telltale signs towards the end where it's like, we really haven't been informed of this thing yet. Like we haven't been told this is set in stone yet. We don't really know. And I guess maybe that jaded me to where now I'm always
like the second in home.
Yeah. The second. Yeah. It started to get like, we don't know. We haven't been informed.
Yeah. So I think I've told the story before, but I mean, Harrison Barnes, the night before he announced on Skype, that's back when we had a chat room on our
message
boards.
Remember those. Yeah. The midnight chats. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I was, when was Harrison Barnes? Was it 2009?
He came in. He was a freshman, 10-11. So yeah, 10-11. He committed 09. Yep.
Yeah, 09. So I mean, I was actually finishing up in school at that point, in law school, and so I mean, I had weekends free. So I mean, I was running chats at night and all that kind of stuff. And I mean, I'll never forget it. We were literally the day before the whole announcement at his high school. I mean, I was literally about to fly one of our writers out to Ames, Iowa to do this. And I was actually coordinating with Scout at the time to do it. And we're in the chat and, you know, we're all just talking about the different kids and the different recruitments and all this kind of stuff. And Barnes calls me because I had covered him and he's like, hey, I just wanted to return your phone call because I had requested to do an interview with him like a week before. And unsolicited, he calls me. And like he's answering questions and all this kind of stuff, and I'm going, okay, this is weird, but you know, okay, cool. And so, I mean, that's why I was confident. And so, like the next day, I forget which assistant it was. Was it Collins? I don't remember.
Or Wojo, anyway, right? Yeah,
it wasn't Wojo. I didn't talk to Wojo that much. But I was talking to somebody on staff, and we were chatting, and they said, you know, we're not getting him. Like, what do you mean you're not getting him? And he's like, well, there's an announcement on Skype. And this is what they told Krzyzewski, too.
We don't even got Skype.
That's exactly right. And so, yeah. And so I was like, that can't be right. There's no way this kid would have done. And yeah, he did.
Yeah.
But, you know, that same class, we knew about Kyrie Irving before he took the A&M visit, before he took the Kentucky visit.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens sometimes. I mean, you know, every recruitment is different. Every coaching staff is different. Every flow of information is different. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's tough to lock it down. We were talking about it offline, but, you know, one thing I think you're going to see with Duke, the Duke market especially, is, you know, you've got now the guy who is the head recruiter, the head information gatherer, the head liaison. I mean, because, you know, anybody who watched Duke recruit over the last decade, yeah, Mike Krzyzewski didn't go out to events except for like one or two. I mean, it was always the Duke staff is there. And then when Coach K showed up, it was like a huge event. But, you know, now you've got the guy who's the head recruiter for the last however long. He's the head coach. So there aren't going to be leaks. There's not an exchange of information as much because that guy can control it all. You know, and it's one less chain of the game of telephone, I guess.
Right. Right.
And so, and you know, and Duke they handle their business behind the scenes very well. They are very organized and they're very precise. And, you know, these kids know when Duke wants them and they know when Duke is ghosting them. So, you know, BJ's recruitment was, I don't think Duke was overly shocked. But, you know, they didn't get confirmation. I know they didn't have confirmation up until the day before he announced.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think he did let them know early. And I think that Duke didn't leak it. But, you know, I kept hearing from Baylor saying that they got him. So,
And if they didn't leak it too, then sometimes that's the telltale itself, right? Of like, okay, nothing's coming through. Maybe that's
one of the most famous leaks. And he's actually a podcast buddy of ours. Jeff Goodman, next time you have him on, we'll ask him about the Singler recruitment because Goodman broke it that he was going to Duke, and Jeff got it, I think, from the Arizona staff at the time. And Singler's parents were pissed. It did not go well. We'll have to ask him about that this summer when we get him back on.
Yeah, I'll have to get Kyle. Yeah, I get Jeff on, talk about Kyle. Love Kyle. Before we do get out of here, though, let's talk about the biggest craze, right, post-VJ. And I'm going to try to pronounce his name the right way, but I believe it is Kamen Malich. There's like an L/W kind of sound there, trying to get that right. I think he's blowing up. He's supposed to come on campus. There's a lot of trends, a lot of excitement. Is this a little premeditated here, John? Because I've seen, you know, I don't want to quote anyone, but some chatter over on our side and stuff about, you know, there's going to be a lot that goes into this. There's a lot of people involved in this. There's a lot of factors and layers, and he doesn't even have to come to college at all. Like, realistically here, are you giving Duke a 70% chance, 50% chance? Where are you at with this thing?
Yeah, that's a loaded question. Today's environment. But so let's first just kind of realize what this kid is. He's 16 years old, mm-hmm. Maybe 17 now. At 16 years old, he played in the 2023 FIBA World Cup for South Sudan. I mean, that's the senior national team. He didn't play much, but he played at 16. It's pretty good. You know, he's 7'1". He's got a huge wingspan. He finishes really well around the rim, has really good footwork. He's pretty mobile. But, you know, offensively, he can also shoot. Yeah. He's got a repeatable and reliable shooting motion, and he makes shots all the way out to the three-point line. You know, defensively, he's not Mark Williams. He's not Derek Lively. But he's probably closer to Williams in that, you know, just a post defender. I don't think he moves as well on the perimeter as Lively did. I don't think he's as versatile as a defender as Lively was. But, you know, shot blocking, bothering shots, I mean, he would be, this year, he would be Duke's best rim defender, without a doubt, at 16 years old, 17 years old. So you know, he's really, really good. People call him like, you know, like Joel Embiid. He more emulates Giannis in just the way he plays. And I think Giannis is actually, he's quoted a couple of times as saying that's who he emulates, that's who he watches, that's who he wants to pattern his game out of. And, you know, 7-1, that's impressive. So that's what they're looking at. You know, some of the secondary stuff you see out there. I mean, if you go back and look at the kid's Twitter, he's liked every Duke post and followed every Duke personality for like the last 6 months. Yeah. You know, full disclosure, he's followed our site a couple of times, and we've had a couple exchanges with him on the back end through, you know, direct messaging and stuff. And he legitimately likes Duke, legitimately likes the program, legitimately likes the brand, all of that. So, you know, I think a lot of it's going to have to do with the fact of, you know, what does he want? You know, I've been on our boards. I know Adam's been on the boards and said it. The national guys have said it. If he comes to college, I would not bet against Duke. Question is he going to come to college? And, you know, a lot of that's going to be different factors. You know, does he want to play maybe a year in Australia, make some money? You know, I don't think he goes to the G League. I don't think the G League's going to be a good option for him. I think you know, the issue with being a non-American is how much money can he make NIL wise under the current rules? Because I remember Kentucky had this issue with Oscar a couple years ago. And I'm pretty sure they worked like an international trip or something, or found workarounds to get him compensated.
I think doesn't Zach Edey have the same thing? Because isn't he Canadian?
Something like And again, I don't know the ins and outs. I've not read the legislation for NIL, but you know, I know that's a challenge. You know, I would make the argument that if he's going to play in America next year, Duke is the best place. He's going to get the most exposure. You know, probably have the best NIL deal that he can get. He's probably going to, you know, be a really good piece, much like Mark Williams benefited playing beside Paolo. I think this kid would benefit by playing beside Cooper and vice versa.
Yeah.
And, you know, defensively, him at the five, Cooper at the four, Mark at the three, it's like you could put the fighting Greg Paulus's out at the one and two and still be a plus defensive team.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys would just be, it would be scary. as far as, you know, does he come to Duke? I think we'll know more after this weekend. And I think this is a recruitment. Adam touched on it on the boards. It was very, very accurate with what he said, which is, you know, if this recruitment comes out, it's going to be a professional recruitment. And what I mean by that is you're not going to have a recruiting site breaking news. The news is going to be broken through NBA channels because this kid's ultimate goal is to get to the NBA. Mm-hmm. And he's playing at the NBA Academy in Africa anyway. So, you know, this is something that Duke has been working on. They started working on it last year when Carwell went over to watch it on one of those, not a secret recruiting visit, but a non-publicized one. And they've just kept in touch with him. And I think this, I think they've done a really, really good job with him. You know, question is, does he want to play college basketball? And, you know, the answer is, well, he's flying over this weekend to visit one school and one school only. That's a pretty big, sign.
That's a big endorsement, especially, for sure.
Especially when he's already reclassified. And, you know, I go back to the old adage, if you reclassify, you know where you're going. If you're going to go that route.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think it's like the, do you think the college basketball versus not college basketball debate is more in terms of just like, okay, it could, there could be benefits to let me go ahead and get stateside. Let me go ahead and get over there, get acclimated a little bit, kind of get my feet set and then get ready to go. Do you think it's more of a skill or a branding or a visibility thing? Like, or is it just, is it off court, on court? Do you have any kind of sense of like what might factor into that?
You know, it's different for every kid. I mean, like Tyrese Proctor could have just stayed in Australia for a year, played in the NBL, but he wanted to come in and play college basketball at the highest level. And, you know, you can make the argument that college basketball at the highest level, especially when you're at Duke, it's going to prepare you on and off the court more than playing for the, you know, the Brisbane whatevers. It's going to certainly prepare you more for the off the court demands. Than, you know, playing for the whoever in the G League, where, you know, you're basically playing nowhere and, you know, no one knows who you are until the end. You know, from a branding thing, I think he could do a lot with the Duke Network. He could do a lot with the exposure he would get next year. I mean, you know, does exposure ultimately matter? I don't know that it does this day and age, because at the end of the day, you know, the NBA guys are going to find you. But I would argue that him playing in college basketball next year would give him the biggest challenge, the biggest exposure, and probably the biggest opportunities. Especially when you consider, you know, a lot of the big guys will still be here next year. And, you know, Duke will play a national schedule. He'll get seen. He'll get evaluated. You know, does he need to play college basketball? No, but he's got to do something for the next year. So why not do it in the place that could, you know, help him the most? And unless it's purely about money, which would be, you know, okay, go play in Australia or something. But even then, he's not going to make a ton of money. Even with LaMelo Ball, when he went over there, you know, he had the hype of his nutcase dad. And so, you know, he had endorsements. He had secondary forms of income. I mean, this kid is, if you're not a basketball junkie, you don't know who he is.
Right.
That's not a negative thing. It's just, it's a reality. I mean, you know, so it's, you know, he could come in and make a name for himself real quick. And that could drive up his value, could drive up his branding. And, you know, like I said, he's got some connections to Duke, you know, Luol Deng and some other stuff. But
yeah, I was going to bring that up.
Deng
has been, you know, kind of orchestrating the Sudanese team, correct?
Yes, and he's been very active there. And, you know, I mean, it's this kid. I mean, you want a percentage, I'd say 70-30 for Duke would be. Okay. And that would probably be, you know, if it's college basketball, I'd be stunned if it's not Duke. There's a lot of people who are involved in this decision, you know, where to go, when to go, how to go.
You know, it does sound like things are going to pick up quickly, though, post-visit, right? Like, it's not happen kind of quick, or do you think this could drag to summer? Or
publicly, I think publicly, I don't think it's going to – I think it'll just come out of the blue. I think we'll know more after this weekend, to be honest with you. And, you know, from Duke's perspective, it may be a situation of watch what they do. I mean, this isn't like Marvin Bagley, who just, you know, it was an open secret that he was going to reclassify. I mean, this kid's already reclassified. I mean, and, you know, quite frankly, in June of 2025, he's going to be shaking hands with Adam Silver.
Yeah.
So, you know, we know what the end game is. We know that he's, you know, he doesn't have to make a decision until a certain time, but from Duke's perspective, he needs to make a decision, you know, probably by the end of the season, basketball season, college basketball, because if not, Duke's got to start hitting the portal because they've only got one big guy. And then, you know, Sean Stewart as well. If you consider him a center.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, other than that, they got to start figuring stuff out. So, you know, right now, I would say if he's college basketball, I think it's Duke, and we'll know more after the weekend. But I would kind of suspect that, you know, a lot of people are looking at this going, well, you know, you start looking at the, you know, the ancillary stuff. He's flying over here. He's seeing one school only. You know, he's followed every Duke account there is. He's liked all these people.
Really not window dressing involved at this point. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's, I mean, more
it's,
than
it's
that.
It's pretty
yeah.
clear. And he fits a need for Duke. You know, and, you know, people are going to, the naysayers are going to go, well, the kid, you know, Pat, who committed to Duke over a long time relationship with Kansas State, before we start going down that road of, you know, it'll upset him and he might look to leave, he knew they were going to get another big guy. I mean, you're losing Filipowski and Ryan Young this year. I mean, that's your starting two centers. You don't replace two with one. You just don't do it.
Hmm.
So, you know, I don't think that's going to be an issue. It's,
and Pat's had some like stuff, right? Didn't he have to have like surgery, or he's got some knee stuff or something that's going on that I saw with that
foot stuff. So, yeah.
True Duke stuff. Player. Of course. It, yeah.
Lower extremity.
Lower.
Exactly. Indefinite. So, yeah.
All right. Last one, John, and we'll get out of here. Don't know how much if you can really speak to this, maybe just of like the vibes, but someone had asked, like, how long kind of would Jay Lucas stay on the staff? Like, at what point does he jump ship for a head coaching job? Have you heard anything about it's going to be, I know for a long time, I guess it was with John or Chris or one of those guys, it's got to be the right fit. It's not just going to be any job. It has to be, you know, a specific type of school. Do you get the sense that Jay's kind of chomping at the bits to get there, or he's playing more of the long game? He's patient. He's looking for the right fit, or has that not even really been discussed?
You know, I don't, during the seasons, we don't really talk about that kind of stuff with guys. I mean, he was on our podcast, you know, what, a year ago now? I mean, he's a very bright young coach. You know, he's done tremendously well at Duke. He'll be in high demand. But, you know, just like we were talking, you know, the one I always go back to was Wojo, because, you know, everyone thought he was going to leave for Dayton at one point. And he never did until Marquette came open.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Collins was happy at Duke. I thought it was going to be Collins for a while. And then Northwestern came open. It's like, that's it. Chicago guy, Northwestern.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I didn't understand Nate James going to Austin Peay. You know, Capel going to Pitt, that made sense because went to Oklahoma, did well, you know, had some issues, came to Duke, rebuilt himself, and then another high major ACC game comes up. It's like, yeah, go to Pitt, man. Yeah. Go be a high major coach. I don't know that Jay's going to leave for a, you know, mid-major. But, you know, I'm assuming that, you know, he and his family are, you know, got that Texas connection. Who knows what's going to happen down there? You know, one I would look out for, and this is just speculation on my fault, but I mean, you know, with ACC getting a Texas presence in there, you know, yeah, Texas basketball might be something to look at some point. You know, but there's a lot of good talent out there. And of course his dad's royalty out there. So, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of opportunities, but I don't see him leaving for anything other than a Power Five job right now. But again, you know, who knows? You know, maybe Louisville will be looking for a new coach soon, and you know, they'll want another Duke assistant who's actually ready for a head coaching job. So.
Oh, Louisville. Don't want to talk about him during the season, but I guess you know, maybe in Phoenix would be an okay time to interview him about that stuff right now. I don't want to get too far into the weeds there, but well, you know, John, we appreciate it. This was kind of a fun thing we decided to do. Typically you do these in long form. We decided, you know what, let's kind of do it on the podcast, get the board involved. We're not really, I have it on here as we get out of here. I'm not going to do another pit preview. We just did that like 14 days ago or however long it was. Not much has changed except for they've lost 4 out of 5, pretty much the same group that's going to be coming in. I think the only thing worth mentioning is we're just kind of on health alert. You know, what's the status of Roach and Mark Mitchell going to be like? I think you can get by if you just have one of those guys for pit. If you don't have either one, then this is going to be a much different game than it was down in over in Pittsburgh. So, you know, I don't know if there's anything we can say about that, but
heaven help me and forgive me and everything. If Mitchell's not there, this does feel like a game Stewart could really factor into. I don't know, other than the fact, you know, Pitt's offense isn't all that great. Maybe he doesn't get so lost on defense, but I mean, feels like a game he could help because they've got the, you know, the center who's got the same name twice, and then they got the 2 7-foot twins.
Yeah.
But there's a margin of forgiveness
that might exist. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Don't want him guarding Henson a ton though, right? Because Henson's probably going to shoot like 15 threes probably Saturday. Like he's the only one he's got to pretty much. So
If I had to guess, I think Roach will play. Mitchell's still not practicing from what I understand. So, you know, we'll see. But I mean, just because he's not practicing right now, I mean, you know, how many Seth Curry went through an entire season in a boot.
Never practice. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
on the bike, you know, just kind of doing treadmill stuff for the whole time. So,
I figure we'll figure out Mitchell's status will be announced like 20 minutes before the game or something.
Yeah.
I mean,
how they like to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, they should win, hopefully, because they certainly can't afford to lose the momentum.
Got to take care of these ones at home for sure. Again, John, appreciate you coming on. As always, everyone listening, we really appreciate you all. Rate, review, subscribe. You can find us on the boards at thedevilsden.com. You can find us on Twitter at devilsdenpod247. You can email us at devilsdenpod@gmail.com. Anything else that we need to plug? YouTube, thedevilsden.com over there. Adam's always pretty prompt on getting like player interviews up. So all that stuff, you can check the guys out. And as always, keep the faces strong and the verb high. Go Duke.